Unlikable Gaming. Select your character. Musket Shot. Mr. K. Let the battle begin.
Hello and welcome to Indestructible Game No More. I'm Musket Shot. Alongside me is my co-host, as usual, Mr. K. Mr. K, hello.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
And today we have a special guest with us, Mr. Jonathan Brown, owner, pixel artist, game designer, concept artist, and creative director at Quintillion Games. And he's here to talk about the company Quintillion Games and his the new game that's coming out hopefully sometime very soon called Blood of Yemen. Is it Yemen or Yemen?
Blood of Yemen. Yeah.
Yemen. Okay. Well, welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here.
And did I get the name of the company right? Quintillion?
Quintillion Games. Yeah, that's okay. Correct. That's correct.
And this game isn't out yet, but it will be on Steam, and the date is to be determined at this moment, so folks can keep an eye out for that. Go ahead, Mr. K, you can start us off.
Yeah, so before we head into the info of the game, we want to start to get to know you a little more, John. So how did you get started in game design?
One of the ways is I never went to school for any of this or anything like that, and I was a dad, and I had a job and everything. So one of the things I ended up doing was just on my free time trying to get onto indie dev teams as a pixel artist. But that's kind of how it kind of started. I would do a lot of pixel art for some studios, and over time I kind of jumped from different studios depending on stagnation or like a project kind of just going on a hiatus until I kind of started creating my own studio to make sure that, you know, the projects I'm working on were going to be released, and I had a little bit more autonomy on that. But yeah, I kind of started off as a pixel artist for a few different indie studios.
That's cool. So now, do you like pixel art or digital art better? Because I've seen you have some artwork that you did on Art Station, and it was pretty cool. Yeah, I was looking at it, and you have a little bit of both pixel art and digital art. Do you like both of them?
Oh yeah. Well, it definitely depends on the application. I am impartial to both. I definitely have a sweet spot or a thing I do like about both. But it certainly depends on the application, I suppose. You know, I like games like Hollow Knight that have a lot more of the hand-drawn application. And then, you know, Castlevania Symphony of the Night is definitely near and dear to my heart. And classic. That's a pixel art game. It is definitely a classic. But yeah, like I definitely enjoy both mediums. It just kind of depends on what they're being used for.
Yeah.
So where did the name Quintillion Games come from?
Quintillion Games, it's actually named after my son, Quinn.
Oh, nice.
He's my only child, but his nickname for him, you know, is Quintillion or Quintillion. So I thought it was awesome. A nice little homage towards that. And it can kind of stand on its own at the same time. So, yeah.
Well, that's nice. Now, how old is he?
He is 8 now.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So is he a big gamer too?
He is. It's funny because he really wants to play the game that I'm making, and he'll ask me, and I'll let him go through and play test it. And I've learned a couple different bugs just from that. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I guess double jump just stopped working for some reason. Let's figure out why.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think actually the coolest part, honestly, is I've seen him do pixel art animations on my tablet using my program that I use. And it's just amazing to see this little kid, you know, doing things I wish I could have done. But yeah, it's quite
that sounds fulfilling. Really impressive.
It is. It genuinely is. Like, I've seen some of the stuff he does. It's like, geez, that's a huge canvas. Yeah.
Well, he might have a little bit of a future ahead of him.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Right? Hopefully. Right.
Yeah.
But you know, he'll talk about like, hey, maybe you should make a platform that crumbles and falls down or something like that. I was like, yeah. And he's like, here, I'll draw and show you what the animation would look like. Like, show me. I would love that.
That's incredible. Yeah. And that's great because if he's playing a game and he's finding things either difficult or too easy or something doesn't seem to be working right, I mean, it's great because he's telling you and he's obviously feeling like he's a big part of this game. So I can't imagine how excited he's going to be when that comes out.
Oh, me too. There's, you know, some of it's a bit mature, especially some content I have planned, but you know, maybe he won't be playing through those parts.
Yeah. Give me the controller for that part.
but you know, the beginning portion, it's, you know, it's tamed.
So did you know the people on your team from past work experience or just through common interests? You have, I think, was it about 6 people on your team? Is that correct?
If I remember? In total, including myself, there's 4.
4. Okay. Okay.
And I knew it's a mixed pot, actually. My writer, I've worked with him on a few different projects now. Very talented writer and designer, Maddie or Too Timid. Another one, I knew his work. He's our music and audio composer. He did mods for like RimWorld and doing like the music for some of those. And oh my God, very talented. I can't believe that he is working with us. So I'm very happy with that. And then the last one I've actually found off of, you know, Reddit of all places.
Oh, wow.
I think it was like under like the subreddit, I need a team or something like that. But I'm just kind of reaching out to different communities and I found a programmer that's also equally amazing.
Wow. So,
very excited with them. We do have certain things in common, like some games and everything. And we'll talk about that kind of stuff. And yeah, our meetings do get derailed a little bit.
Well, I think that's probably pretty normal for most.
Yeah.
When you all have a lot of the, you know, common interests and stuff like that, it's easy to derail in that.
Absolutely.
So the company was founded in 2020. How difficult was it to get it up and running? And did you have doubts about it succeeding due to the COVID restrictions and health concerns?
Well, I think starting up a business or, you know, just like an indie studio like this is definitely difficult. It's very interesting, especially with the whole 2020 thing. I mean, people work from home during that time, and it kind of landed in my lap where that was a situation.
COVID did a lot to studios.
Yeah, and I think the biggest part was just the mental health endurance, I guess, is the best way to say it. Over the past couple of years, it's been rough, but you know, having a healthy mindset and people around you have definitely helped me get to where I am for sure. I wouldn't say that the COVID restrictions or stuff like that have really hindered me. I luckily have not had an issue with COVID or anything like that, but you know, COVID itself is just a completely different hot mess of a topic and causes a lot of stressful situations. So it at least made it apparent that I'm like, okay, let's just do something. I need to do something. I need to create something. And just kind of have a little bit more autonomy over my life. So I think it was some sort of outlet in some capacity for sure.
So now your whole team works remotely too, right? So you're all communicating remotely or do you go to any type of office or anything like that?
We all do work remotely. We're all kind of split across the U.S. Some across the ocean. But yeah, it's interesting working remotely. We definitely have to do weekly meetings. You know, even if the weekly meeting isn't a whole lot, just having a moment that of making sense. Sure that's consistent, right? Mm-hmm. Make sure that people are going to be there is the big part. So having weekly meetings. And finding a specific time for the different time zones was definitely a little bit tricky too, but I think it's been pretty good. I mean, even if we did get a studio set up and everything, I would even still be okay with working remotely, depending on how the members of our team kind of wanted to work. So I don't think that's been an issue at all, at least from my experience so far.
Yeah, the company I work for, I used to go into an office and. There's still talk of going back to the office maybe a couple of times a week, but it's amazing how much changed where we're working from home now that even senior management have been like, wow, you know what? There's really no need for us to go rush back. So just, you know, continue working from home. And it's amazing what you can get done too. I mean, sometimes you do spend a little bit more time, at least I do, spending a little bit more time working overtime, but it definitely makes it a lot different though on my lifestyle. I don't want to get stuck in traffic and deal with all that and, you know, have to worry about other things. So it's nice.
And tackling self-motivation.
Yeah.
During that time, you know, that's key. So yeah, working from home is a mixed bag for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that, you know, if things did work out and we were able to get our own studio or had the ability to, I would at least have a personal office I could go to just so that way I could have a different change of mindset and get myself in a different thought process.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it definitely seems like the team is doing very well on what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
The game looks really good. I do like it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Speaking of team building, what kind of team building collaboration tools or techniques have you used to help you out?
I have not done any real team building exercises. I think one of the things I've done in the past too is, you know, when we get together and we kind of chat about games and everything like that, different types of, you know, games we play are brought up and, you know, we will sometimes play amongst each other and play with each other. And I think that itself is a pretty good team building exercise, but I haven't done any team building exercises mainly because our schedules are so completely different, you know, with different time zones and just different obligations. Almost everybody that's working on the project aside from myself is, I believe, you know, they either go to school or have, a main job that they're working through and working on. It could be a little bit difficult to get everybody's time outside of what's set for a weekly meeting on the same time zone or time frame.
Sure. Now, is everybody full-time with Quintillion Games, or is everybody mostly, or is it like a mixed bag of part-time and full-time?
Right now, for me, it's full-time, right? Like, I work on the project, and I have, you know, between social media manager and of itself, I do the sprites, I do the graphics you see there, level design, game design, all that kind of stuff. I definitely wear all the hats that I can wear. But, you know, when it comes to the other individuals, no. They have, if I need something done, like we're, you know, when we were trying to do the trailer, there was a lot of iterations, a lot of time that our music and audio and sound composer was working on that kind of stuff. And he put in a decent amount of time, not to mention all the different types of tracks he's put out for us just to listen. So definitely time going in. But once our project gets funded and we have that money on our belt to pay them, we then will all go to full time to complete the project. You know, like I said, they all have the jobs and everything that they have to do to make ends meet. And I wouldn't want to jeopardize that for them. So, for them, it's kind of as needed. And for myself, it's go, 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 go. But, sure. That's kind of what I wanted. I mean, I created the studio for that reason so that way I could have the autonomy and I could, you know, create the pace for the game. So I wouldn't want it any other way.
Oh, that's great. So now Blood of Yamen is a Metroidvania RPG, and which is, like I said, was coming out on Steam. What made you decide on this style of gameplay or genre for the game?
Well, I'm very passionate about Metroidvanias. I mean, I've played Metroidvanias since, well, the very old school Castlevanias. One that literally sticks out to my mind all the time is definitely Symphony of the Night, but I've played a lot of Metroidvanias and I've played a lot of RPGs. I mean, those were a lot of my childhood. So it's a genre that I'm very passionate about. Another part of it. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Would you say Symphony of the Night is your favorite?
I would say that. Yeah, I think so. I genuinely, you know, I don't know if it's nostalgia goggles or what. I haven't played it for a couple of years, but every single time I went back to it, it was utterly amazing. The even now, if you take a look at the animations or the graphics for it, it just looks amazing.
Very well designed.
Yeah. And you could like, I've seen what websites that kind of like pull apart their tile sets and their animations. So that way you could kind of like study them. And it's just, it's grand. It truly is. Beautiful. Another one that I did enjoy is the obligatory, you know, Hollow Knight that came out recently. That was also very good, very well done. But it, you know, it feels like a different creature compared to Symphony of the Night, but is definitely one of my favorite in the genre. But another reason that we chose to do this style of game, honestly, was also, you know, team size. This was a project that I felt that I could tackle, that we could do well. And add something to it, even with the size of our team and the scope of the project. Like it worked well.
Yeah, I know Mr. K there is a pretty good, he's a pretty big fan of like Metroidvania type games. And I know, did you play that Symphony of the Night, Mr. K?
Yeah, I did. Played it before.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
I know you played Hollow Knight. I know you played that, but okay. Cool.
Well, what's your favorite, Mr. K?
It's a hard one. I played a lot. I'm gonna have to go with the most unoriginal, probably Super Metroid.
Oh, okay.
It's like, it's not the most unique one I could say, but it's a very basic Metroidvania. Most common one to hear.
I have never played a Metroid game. I've played the 3D Metroid that came out like on GameCube.
Oh, the right? Metroid Prime series?
Yeah. So I played that, but I never played a old school Metroid game. I always ended up playing the Castlevanias back in the day, more so than anything else. I remember that 3D Metroidvania game that came out like on the 360. I can't remember what the name of it was.
Oh, Lords of Shadow? Is that the one you're talking about?
Maybe. I think that might be it. But
the one made by Kojima, right? The same people who made like Metal Gear Solid. And I remember there was two of them. It was the Lords of Shadow and then some other one. I can't remember it at the moment, but
I never played the Castlevania Lords of Shadows. No,
it was kind of like a hack and slash.
Yeah, I heard actually really, really good things about those. My brother played quite a bit of it. And he was showing me a little bit of that. I never got into I played the old school on Nintendo 64 Castlevanias that were 3D and they were rough.
Oh, I've seen those. Yeah, those are
a little rough. that transition wasn't the most graceful transition. But yeah, it's funny.
The game looks really good, and because it's both digital and pixel. Was that like the intent the whole time? Were you gonna go for one and not the other, or did it kind of just start from both from the beginning?
When it comes to the style, it is primarily set up for a pixel art game. So everything you're going to find in game will definitely be pixel art. We do have some promotional material that is digital, but otherwise we start with the digital work for like concept art and stuff like that. And then we kind of move it into pixel art after that. But yeah, everything in game is definitely going to be pixel art.
That's impressive.
If we even have cutscenes, I believe it'll be that way too.
Oh no, that's cool. That's
something to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. What was one of the biggest challenges your team faced while making this game so far?
I think my biggest challenge is marketing. To be completely honest, it is just it's a completely different game, for lack of a better term, than just game designing. I'm an introvert, so going out and finding ways to communicate is just not something I've practiced. I do not have the skill set for something like that. So marketing has definitely been one of the most interesting and most challenging thing that I've faced. That and finding a balance between life and work at home. you know, whether that's self-motivation or, you know, like we discussed earlier, starting the company up in 2020, that was it was definitely a tough time, but, you know, having something that I could work on and kind of put all that pent up energy in, was nice. The mental health battles and just self-motivation has definitely been probably the most challenging part, I guess, of the project. Everything else, it's a matter of learning, and it takes a little bit. You know, this is my first time creating a game, but I think I chose the right engine using Unity to do so. And I have a very talented team behind me. So when I have questions on programming or stuff like that, you know, they're there to answer and to kind of help and steer us and correct anything that happens that I otherwise would not have the ability to.
Sure. Plus you got your son to help you with
exactly.
Some pixel art.
Exactly.
So I like Musk just said, I do like my Metroidvanias, and I've always wondered, because, you know, you go back from one place with the new thing to another place with a new thing to find a new area and mm-hmm. all that. Does you start like with a novel first, like you put it out as a list or something like that, or like you write it down and then it shifts to programming, or is it kind of like you do both at the same time?
I think different teams will definitely have different answers for this. For me, maybe it's because of my prior experience with different indie studios. We never really had the structure, the internal structure I yearned for when game developing. So when I started my project, I started with a high concept doc that kind of went over everything, you know, between lore, art style, gameplay beats, narrative beats, stuff like that. And then from there, I developed that into a GDD, a game development doc. And that just took every little sentence and expanded it into everything it could be expanded into, whether it was what a condition did, how to do the math for the damage, or, you know, what does it mean to get XP, stuff like that. And then it kind of keeps going from there. We have product breakdowns, which kind of breaks down all the assets, everything that I would imagine need to be made for the game. And then it goes even more granular than that. Whether it was a programming outline or a sound effects music outline, I would pull members of my team into a meeting and sit down and be like, okay, let's talk about what it's going to take to program this game. Let's talk about, you know, from the ground up, like what we don't have, what we're going to need, what we think we may need, how long they think that might take. So for me, I have a lot of documents and a lot of information stored up in Google Drive for that reason. So for me, it almost is a novel prior to programming or anything like that, or even getting it into the engine. But I think that's also because I didn't know anything about the engine. I didn't know how to do all that kind of stuff, how to design. So I started with what I did know, and I knew what I wanted the game to be. So started with the doc and then made hundreds of other docs. Once I got into Unity and figured out what exactly I'm looking at, I made even more docs. And I like, you know, I'm the type of person who carries around 2 to 3 notebooks with different agendas in them. Like one of them's like an agenda, essentially, where I'm just blotting down what I did that day. Another one is like everything I think about in my game between map design, game design, UI design. It's sketched out in a notebook. But that's just because I really like the idea of having a notebook full of information for a game. I don't know. I'm kind of weird like that, I guess.
Well, it's nice to know all that, because I've always wanted to be a game designer. I never knew where to even start. So it's nice to hear that, you know, sometimes you just kind of go with what you know and then you build off of that and get better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems to be a lot of some of the other designers that we've talked to. It seems to be sort of a learning process. They learn as they're going along. And so that I'm sure that makes it quite interesting and enjoyable too.
You also watch a lot of GDC conference like videos. Let me tell you, I've watched so many. Yeah, there's so much information out there. You just really have to dig for it, but there's so much information.
Now, on Steam, there's some information about the game, and it mentions a the character can join one of three influential guilds. And now, I don't remember if it said what the character's name. Do you mind, Nick?
The character himself doesn't really have a name, at least as it currently stands. I wanted the character to be a lot more of
mysterious,
a step in for the player.
Okay,
and kind of put themselves in it. You know, does a Skyrim character have a name? No, not really.
Right, right.
My big thing about this, especially when it comes to RPGs and when creating this, I wanted the character to be an extension of the player in every way. Whether or not in the future, you know, we give him a name, we'll just probably allow you to switch it. You know, kind of like old school Zelda, or, you know, all those RPGs where you get, you know, Tidus or Cloud, and you get the choice to change that if you like.
Yeah. Now you can join one of three influential guilds. Mm-hmm. So could you tell us a little bit more about that and how it affects gameplay?
Yeah. So right now it's definitely still a work in progress. Of course everything is at this point. But one of the ways that I want the guilds to impact the player are through, you know, narrative beats, getting information you otherwise wouldn't, or a story you otherwise wouldn't. So joining, you know, bounty hunters is going to be a far cry from joining, you know, the Mageocracy that we have, or the, you know, Thieves Guild or something like that. Just kind of allows, again, another avenue of allowing the player to kind of put himself in there and kind of get what he wants out of it. Outside of that, you'll get gear. And in my game, you know, Blood of Yamen, gear is going to be one of the focal points of allowing you to have different types of play styles, because gear will have different stat allocations on them. Not to mention, you know, beating a guild will also allow you to have unique abilities. So joining the Scholars is going to allow you to have, you know, a different ability that you otherwise wouldn't have if you joined like the Bounty Hunters or so on. So.
Now, could you like switch guilds like during the game, or is it like a permanent thing once you do it?
For this, that is definitely going to probably be a playtesting thing to kind of see. I always want to make sure the player doesn't feel too locked in, but I think there's some sort of value in allowing the player to have a more unique playthrough. And one of those ways of doing that, I think, would be through like the guild system. But I'm not entirely sold on that quite yet. It'll be definitely a playtesting.
It does sound pretty cool, though. And going off of that, forging your own play style, how does that like affect gameplay?
Yeah, there's multiple different ways. So I, as I've kind of described this as kind of like a Metroidvania RPG, one of the key aspects of RPG is role playing, and one of the ways that you can role play is by defining a role. And you could do that through, as I've stated, like gear or stats. You could do it by having, you know, choosing what kind of unique ability you want to use, or a function that we've kind of are featuring, which is kind of what we're calling Yamenite beads. And these Yamenite beads are, you know, they take something like a double jump, something as basic as a double jump. And, you know, when you double jump, you now shoot lightning under you, or you throw daggers out under you. Or if you get a dash, you know, when you dash, you could dash through enemies and impale them and do damage. Or at the end of the dash, you throw out daggers, and every dagger that hits an enemy, they have bleed on them or something like that. So cool. Just taking core functions of what's typically seen inside of a Metroidvania and adding a layer of player identity to it.
Sounds really fun.
And the game also mentions outlaws and monsters. So I don't know how much you can get into this without giving too much away, but why are the outlaws out to get the main character, and what kind of monsters would the main character face within the game?
Yeah. So for the outlaws, it's a very the world of Yamen is definitely a very angry world, and especially the time in which the player is going to be taking place during an industrial revolution. And a lot of power is being taken up in this moment by larger entities and not leaving a whole lot for others. And I think that breeds, you know, moments for outlaws to seize what they can seize and through any means possible. And that kind of goes against the character at times, and you'll find yourself in moments of where you're in a very hostile area plagued by outlaws because they're just there to kind of get what they can. And for the monsters, it's definitely varied. We have a lot of interesting like animals or fauna that the player will be going against, but we also have a mysterious race of creatures called, you know, the Kin. And I don't want to go into too much detail there, but they are definitely an organic statue kind of thing that has a theme of body horror around it. So
that's pretty cool.
That's thematically of how they feel. But yeah, I wouldn't want to get into too much detail about that because it's definitely a core mystery there.
Yeah.
Would you say they're your favorite so far in terms of design wise?
Oh yeah, for sure.
What are you gonna say?
Go ahead. They're a lot of fun to design and come up with. We've had a couple of designs, and we're going to share some of those concepts on our Kickstarter when that goes live too, so you guys can kind of get a feel for them. But it's been a lot of fun kind of coming up with ideas for that.
That definitely sounds really cool. I'm going to have to help you fund that. Mm. But the music from the trailer was really good. How important is the music within a game, and how is it decided to see what's good, a good fit for the gameplay, and what's not a good fit?
Yeah. Well, I could only speak for ourselves, but for music being important for a video game, it definitely helps. It's there to definitely set a tone for the encounter or the environment, and it could be very useful when concepting areas or, you know, working off of each other and the different sounds that are being created there. It definitely helps set the tone. One of the ways that we go through it is our music and audio composer will send us like little small bite-sized samples of music he makes. And they'll sometimes be like 30 seconds or a minute long. Not like incredibly developed, but just like these little snippets. And, you know, we have like 70 to 80 of these things. And whenever he posts them, I'll take a listen and listen to it and kind of be like, oh, wow, that gives off vibes for this area I know that we're going to be doing. So I'll like write that in there and say, this is, you know, perfect for like an underground area. You know, maybe we could go a little bit more experimental with the sound here and kind of have like this weird experimental influence on the sound design here. But yeah, the way we do it is he kind of just comes up with like these little weird snippets and we'll kind of take a listen and be like, yeah, I think that works well for this, or I don't think this really works for the game, but you know, sounds really amazing.
Yeah, I think sound for me, and I don't know, Mr. K and I have talked about this a number of times on our podcast. Sometimes the music you don't really hear it or doesn't play a big part in the game. For me, sometimes it does. I think it's weird sometimes.
I think subtlety is important. You know, like something like
Dark Souls or something like that.
Yeah, where it's like very, it could be very bombastic at times with theirs. But if you look at something like Zelda Breath of the Wild, where it's very subdued and you get like these very small moments of like a piano kind of coming through and breaking up the silence. Yeah. It's there to definitely set the tone for sure. I mean, even in the Elden Ring or Dark Souls game, the tone's immediately set for that boss fight once that music's kicked in. Right. So yeah, it's a very strong and useful tool.
Yeah. I know my wife and I have played Divinity, and sometimes some of the fight scenes, they have music that'll be for the whole fight scene. And I'm like, why did they pick this music? It doesn't seem like it fits. It seems like it's too happy.
like Divinity Original Sin. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. So it's kind of weird. Let's see. So who got to do the voice acting for the characters?
Yeah, so the person that we got was his name, or their name is Eamon Kane. They were suggested by the writer on my team. He worked with them before, and they're a very talented individual. And you can find them on Twitter at EamonVO. But we worked with them for a little bit and kind of worked out what our voice would sound like for the protagonist for the trailer. And yeah, they quickly went into it and produced really good work for us. And we kind of nitpicked what we liked out of it and put them all together. And we got a really nice trailer and voice acting for that reason. So
now, do the outlaws and monsters all have different voices, or is that still not?
I don't know if we're going to do a voiceover for the characters in game quite yet. Right. It will definitely depend on funding.
Sure.
The more funding we get, absolutely. There's no reason not to have it. But if we're hitting our goal, we have a modest goal and we have an idea of how the narrative is going to feel and how that's going to play out. But no plans on having it voiceovered unless we obviously hit high enough goal for that in our Kickstarter.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, speaking of that Kickstarter, because of the Kickstarter, I'm curious, is the game going to be released in 2022, or are you going to plan for that to release later on?
No, it won't be releasing in 2022. We're tentative on the date at the moment, as it will solely depend on crowdfunding or publishing. Regardless of those, the game is going to be done. It's just how quick it's going to be done and how much money we could put towards it, when we could put towards it. So kind of all in everybody's hands on the release date there. But it'll definitely fall on money and how quick we could get it done that way.
Yeah. Do you plan to have like an early access available or beta testing available prior, like when you get close to getting it out there?
There would definitely be beta testing for the game, but that will be probably accessible as a perk through a Kickstarter campaign.
Sure.
Depending on the tier. Early access, I doubt it. For early access, I think early access games, there's a specific genre or type of games that require that, where the community kind of helps build it with the people. And games that generally have are much larger scope, you know, typically sandbox games are things that come to my mind that really could use early access. But our game has a very solid scope. I have a pretty good understanding of where we're going with it. We definitely want some beta testing and some quality assurance there, but I don't believe it would be qualified and under my parameters for an early access game.
Okay. And what type of marketing will you do for this game? You've already done trailers and of course the Kickstarter.
Yeah, for marketing, some of the ways that we've been doing it are through sponsorships, you know, going out, reaching out to people on YouTube, websites for, you know, podcasts like this, or, you know, indie news sites, stuff like that. A lot of reaching out and outreach in that end. I do a lot of Twitter ads and trying to like guest contribute on things where we can as well, to try to get our voice out there. But when it comes to marketing, like especially for an indie game, like it's word of mouth. It's all the people listening. It's people sharing and stuff like that. Like there's not a whole lot of reason to have a huge marketing budget for games that aren't asking for a lot in their budget alone, right? So a lot of it's kind of just outreach and kind of generating it as an individual and having people share it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot of indie developers will do quick snippets of maybe some gameplay or something that they've recently developed, and they'll put it on Twitter.
Yeah,
and I find that seems to get quite a good response from most developers. There's a lot of people will either comment or like or view it, and so I think that seems to work just as good as probably other things. I guess it's good word of mouth too. because a lot of people share and all this stuff like that. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, behind the scenes stuff is always fun to watch anyways, right?
Right.
So
right.
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. See how somebody's actually, hey, I just developed, or I just put this in the game, and you can kind of see how it works. It's pretty neat. I know we talked about you had a favorite Metroidvania type game. How about favorite RPG? Do you have a favorite RPG game?
I have too many. Too many. I genuinely really love Dragon Age and the world building in Dragon Age. So Dragon Age Origins has always been my favorite. As they continued on, they kind of waned a bit in my mind, I guess. But I like Soulsborne games. You mentioned Divinity Original Sin. I liked both of those titles, as well as the Pathfinder series, Mass Effect, all that kind of stuff. I've played RPGs from Chrono Trigger and so on and so.
I actually just picked up Dragon's Dogma, if you've heard of that, from the Xbox store today for $5, I think, because of the sale. I never it's played it before. I've heard it's really good. I've seen gameplay. It looks amazing.
A gem from the past that I like that's an RPG, and it's not talked about at all, is Parasite Eve.
Oh, I've heard of that.
I love that game. I love that game in my youth. One and two, for that matter, but one was just amazing. It's something that's not seen very much anymore. People don't talk about it too much, but it has a soft spot for me.
I'm looking at pictures right now. I've definitely seen this before. Looks really cool.
Yeah, I never really got into RPGs until I think later in my life, but I like the Divinity series. I like the first one better than the second one, but
really,
I don't know. I think I just the second one. It just I don't, it's hard to explain. It didn't grab me as much as the first one.
That's fair.
But my wife loves both of those, and she's played both of them for hours and hours, and then she might decide, you know, I want to do something different with my characters. She'll go back, or she'll start a whole brand new game with different characters and stuff like that. So she just absolutely loves the whole type of gameplay that it has. And I like the turn-based type stuff.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for that one.
And I haven't tried those, so that might be one to try.
They are making a Dragon's Dogma 2, so I'm very interested in seeing that. So anything else from yourself or the team that you'd like to share?
Besides, wishlisting our project on Steam, following us on Twitter, join our mailing list on our website, follow us on Kickstarter, all these little things like this, it adds up, and it's the lifeblood of indie games. It's ways that we could get out there and speak and have a voice is through word of mouth. So any sort of engagement on any of those types of things or that I've listed is key. It's something that we definitely would like you guys to do. And hopefully here soon when our Kickstarter debuts, you guys will hear from one of those platforms. We're very excited for that.
Yeah, definitely. Anybody listening to this should definitely check out Blood of Yamen.
Yeah.
Really cool game.
John, do you want to give out your website address and Twitter handle and anything else that you have that you want people to follow?
Yeah. Should I give those out through just voice here?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, cool. For a Kickstarter, how about this? For our Twitter, it's at QG_studios with an S at the end. And for the website, it's www.quintilliongames.com. Quintillion, like the number. Hopefully we'll have my Steam linked in some way. We're Blood of Yamen on Steam as well.
Okay, great.
One more question, because I just thought of this and now I'm curious. What about Steam Deck? Are you interested in bringing it over to that?
Yeah, I mean, I have no issue with that. Is it something I've looked at yet? No, it is not. I'm even interested in bringing the game to other platforms than just Steam. You know, we've looked at the idea of doing it on Switch. We've looked at the idea of doing it on the Xbox Game Pass, if that's possible.
That'd be really cool.
But yeah, we haven't really dove into that quite yet. We know for sure we're going to be launching it on Steam. Yeah, we'll be trying to do it on any and all platforms that we could, that we feel like there's going to be a following for there. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm still waiting on my Steam Deck. And but definitely once it comes in, it'd be very fun to play Bloody Yamen on the go.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what I think too.
Now, is there something different that you have to do for the game to have it go onto the Steam Deck as opposed to just being on Steam?
I am not smart enough to answer that question. That is a question that I would look at my programmer and say, is it?
Make it work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's out of my wheelhouse personally, but I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
That would be something I would have to take a look at once we're kind of through or getting through production and in a later life cycle of game development.
Will the game support controllers? Or
yes, it will.
Okay, sick.
Yeah, that's good. Definitely.
I'm much better with a controller than with a keyboard. Oh,
especially on a Metroidvania. There's not very good controls for a Metroidvania on just keyboard and mouse. It doesn't feel very like set up for it, right?
Especially when you have like so many things you can do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is definitely recommended to play it with a controller.
I'm always surprised at how many people do like playing on a keyboard, though. And I mean, maybe it's just they grew up that way and it just feels natural to them. But I guess for me growing up, I've always had a joystick, you know, whether it was Atari joystick or Nintendo joystick or something. So to play on a keyboard, it's just so unnatural feeling. It just, unless you're using just the arrow keys or something like that, then it's not so bad. But to try to remember where all the letters are and stuff like that, it's like, oh man, just it's hard to do for me.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's all we have. So, John, we want to thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, appreciate you doing this. And we're going to get this out there and wish you a lot of luck with the game. And let us know if there's anything else we can do. And hopefully we can get out there and try your game out when it comes out, whether it's a demo or something like that. And then we can discuss it on a podcast.
I'd love to.
Yeah, because I know Mr. K is very much into the Metroidvania stuff. He probably will get further in it than I will, but I like playing any type of game just to experience it.
Sure.
And you never know. Sometimes this might be the Metroidvania game that I can actually do really well in. And so, who knows? But thank you very much for joining us and we appreciate your time and wish you all the best of luck in the future in this game.
Of course. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah. Thank you, John. No
problem. Thank you.
Hey guys, how's it going? Hope you enjoyed the episode. We're on Facebook and Twitter, and if you go on our website with the same name, you can also find us on all the other kinds of stuff you can listen to us to. Anyways, hope you have a wonderful day, folks. Stay destructible, and peace.